Rabbanim. Rabbanim Rosenfeld make it. Okay. Shuz Harav. Good luck, everyone. Thank you. Hope you had a wonderful Shabbat Zachar here. Wonderful Cholin Tekka. Who won?
We don't know yet.
We know already.
Okay. Okay, the new guy wins. Very nice. Happy to hear. I welcome my father and Luba and other members of my family. And we're learning, as we do every year, L'zecha Nishmas Miriam Bas Moshe Tzvi, Aleha Shalom. It's not clear in an Ibra Yor, I'm sure the rabbi has spoken about it, it's the kind of thing the rabbi would love. Which month do you do a Yortzeit in? When do we commemorate a Yortzeit in Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni? This isn't a claim that we necessarily do so in Adar Sheni. Her Yortzeit is the 11th of Adar Sheni. Oh, okay, of Adar Sheni. Oh, so there we go. So it's definitely kept in Adar Sheni. Okay, there we go. But we do have a custom to learn together on Shabbat Zachar, and I'm glad to be able to continue to do that. I want to look at aspects of Tefillah as they relate to Megillas Esther. Now, the reality is that we don't think of Megillas Esther, for the most part, as a Megillah of Tefillah. In fact, it's a Megillah of action. It's a Megillah of action. Rabbi Soloveitchik, we've spoken about this before, Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about the fact that this Megillah is the one in which Mordechai and Esther, it's the first post-Nevuah story. Until now, we haven't had to guess what to do. We would know what to do. We would ask the Ribono Shalom, he would send a message with someone. Mordechai and Esther are the first in the post-prophetic age to have to try to figure out what to do by themselves, and it's not clear at any given moment exactly what to do. It's a Megillah where the Ribono Shel Olam is essentially sort of absent. His name is absent. It says HaMelech so many times, but it doesn't mention the name of Hashem. And it seems to be a Megillah about how we act. We do what we can do best, maybe with a little fasting in there, maybe with some other things, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we hope, will bring things in the right direction from behind the scenes. That is the theme, that is the feeling of the Megillah. It's also a day where we act. The day of Purim itself is a day where we act. We do many things. There are four main mitzvos of the day of Purim, all of which involve in some way acting. We are at the center stage. The tefillos of Purim are very downplayed at best. There aren't a lot of tefillos of Purim. There's Al Hanisim, which is stuck into Shmoneh Esrei. As the Gemara explains, we don't say Hallel. It's not a day which is otherwise known for tefillah. And to be quite honest, it's a day where we're not always sure we should even be in shul, having drunk a little teeny bit, whatever it is. It's a day where tefillah is tremendously de-emphasized. We come to shul, and it's sort of yada, 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 al hanisim, yada, 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 and then we read the Megillah. And it's nice that people that don't always come for shacharis come that day to hear the Megillah. Some come for shacharis anyway, some just can't come to hear the Megillah. But to say that Purim is a yom tefillah would be quite a stretch. But the reality is that tefillah lies at the heart of the Megillah. Tefillah is at the center, it's at the core of the Megillah. There are some absolutely beautiful midrashim about tefillah and the story of Megillas Esther. And not only that, tefillah, as we'll hopefully learn tonight, plays an essential role. It should play an essential role on Purim itself. And my goal is not just to give a little more meaning to the Megillah, but perhaps to get us to actually daven on Purim. Purim is a very special day for tefillah, as we'll see. We're very caught up. As I mentioned in YU over Shabbos, there are four mitzvos on Purim, four special mitzvos midrabanan, but there still are 613 mitzvos that we're obligated in. There still are many other things. We're obligated in Torah. We're obligated in tefillah. Where does tefillah come in the Megillah? The reality is, if you look at it and don't know what you're looking for or aren't reading it through the eyes of Chazal, you don't actually see the word lehitpalel. You don't see really any prayer here. You don't see that as something that's done. U'Mordechai yada et kol asher nasa, have the English on the bottom. Mordechai knew and understood everything that had happened. Mordechai had a good understanding of why this happened. We learned this when we learned the Megillah together. Vayikra Mordechai et begadav vayilbash sak va'efer. He dresses, he wears sackcloth, he puts ashes on his head, vayitze betoch ha'ir vayizak zaka gedola umara. And he screams. Now the reality is that one could understand that he screams to the people. He screams in order to get attention. It's not exactly clear that he's screaming to the Ribono Shel Olam, but we'll see that that's the way many understand. He screams in prayer, he doesn't just scream. Vatavona na'arot Esther v'sariseh v'yagidu la v'titchalchal ha'malka ma'od. The maidens of Esther come to her, she's very flustered. V'tishlach begadim la'halbishet Mordechai u'la'asir sako me'alav. And she says, Mordechai, you've got to take, you can't be in front of the king's gate. You can't come to the king's palace dressed like this. V'lo kibel. And he refuses to accept it. What it seems to be is that he's trying to make a stink. He's trying to make a macha. He's trying to show everybody that this is serious. So he doesn't want to take off those clothes. Those clothes send a message, seemingly, to the rest of the Jews of Shushan. She calls Hatach. Chazal say this is Daniel. Pasuk Hey, what's going on? Pasuk Zion. Vayaged lo Mordechai et kol asher karo. Ve'et parashat hakeder. He explains. And what does he tell her to do? Ulahagid la pasuk chet lutzavot alei alavo ala melech lihitchanein lo. Again, melech with a lowercase mem. Okay, what is her job? Her job is to go to the melech, to the earthly king, uluvakesh milfanav al ama. Now, it is interesting. It doesn't say Achashverosh. It says hamelech. But the simple pshat is that she is supposed to do politics, diplomacy. That's how they're going to get out of this. She, of course, gives him a hard time. She says, what are you kidding? I can't go in. Mordechai says, Vayomer Mordechai lahashiv el Esther al tadami v'nafshech lihimaleit beit hamelech mikol ha-yehudim. Don't think that you will survive this if you don't go in. Im hacharesh tacharishi be'et hazot, if you are quiet. Quiet means if you don't speak to the earthly king, right? Again, but everything here is written in an interesting way. If you don't speak to the earthly king, you and the house of your father will perish. And who knows, maybe this is why you became the queen. So she says, okay. And then what does she do? She jumps into action. She says, Lech knos et ha-yudim, et kol ha-yudim ha-nimtzim b'shushan, make a 3-day fast, al tochlu, al tishtu, shloshet yamim. And what are they supposed to do? Fast. Doesn't say anything more than that. It says they're going to fast for 3 days. Gamani v'na'arotai atzum kein. And I and my maidens are also going to do this. We're also going to fast. Okay? And then we're going to go in and we're going to see what happens. Okay? She goes in, vayihi bayom ha-shlishi. She dresses up in her best garments. She comes in, and the king, omedet bechatzer, she is omedet bechatzer, nasachen be'inav. And remember, when we learned this together, towards the end of our Tanakh Shiurim, we pointed out that this really was the miracle moment of the Megillah. Right? That this was a man who was so paranoid that he constantly had himself surrounded by guards. No one could come in. If you came in without saying something, you were killed for showing up without an appointment. And she is able to somehow walk all the way from the Beit HaNashim, from the women's house, all the way to the eyesight of the king. And no one stops her and nobody says anything. And she catches his eye, and suddenly the miracle proceeds. She gets to go talk to him. Unbelievable. There is not a word here that is explicit about tefillah. But this perek, which is the key perek, this is when the miracle of Purim really occurs. The beginning of the perek Dalet and the beginning of perek Hey, once already she has made it in to talk to the king, we have gone from being acted upon to being somewhat to begin to move things in the right direction. That's the heart that's right at smack at the middle of the Megillah. Chazal tell us that there are profound lessons of tefillah that are being played out. Profound tefillos And we're going to see some of them in the words of the Midrash. And profound ideas that we can learn about tefillah from this particular incident. Let's start with a few words from the Vilna Gaon in his commentary to Megillas Esther. Source number one, the lo kibel. Mordechai lo kibel. Right? She says to Mordechai, you can't come. He wants to go talk to her, right? He wants to tell her. There's a big problem. It doesn't, not at all bother. Does it bother anybody? Would you rather have the baby inside or outside?
Inside.
Stay with the baby, please. Babies are good. Okay. So he says, right, Mordechai, she sends them out to Mordechai. Mordechai wants to be able to talk to Esther. He's got to get to her. He knows, he understands Mordechai, yada, kol asher nasa. Suddenly the whole thing, remember, the whole thing comes to him. He gets it. That's why my Esther had to be taken out. That's why all of these things happened, just so that she could be there. He's got to get to her. She says to him, you can't speak to me. You can't come speak to me in sackcloth. So she says to him, what are you doing? Take off the sackcloth, v'lo kibel. Now, we don't necessarily think about this. What does this mean, v'lo kibel? He doesn't accept. He doesn't take off the sackcloth, which means, what can't he do? He can't come in. Now, I don't know exactly what it means to come in and see the queen. But that's her point. She says, you can't come in if you're dressed in the sackcloth. So what does he do to get around that problem? He doesn't take off the sackcloth. What does he do? He sends a messenger. That's why he sends a messenger to go to speak to Esther. So what decision has he made? He basically said, it's more important for me to stay in my sackcloth than it is for me to give the message directly to Esther. What's happening here is a struggle, and we're going to see this play out in just a couple of minutes in a very powerful way. Between hishtadlus, how much do I try to move the pieces, and turning to the Ribono Shel Olam. Mordechai is there, says the Gra, in sackcloth. Mordechai is davening to the Ribono Shel Olam. Esther says, I'm happy to talk. Come, tell me, there's clearly something. Mordechai says, I can't stop davening. V'lo kibel, says the Gra, Piresh, Lo ratza livdol misako afilu rega echad. Mordechai says, I know that I also need to do some hishtadlus. I need to try with an earthly means. I need to figure out how to make this happen. But I know, and you know, Esther, that something of this nature is not going to happen primarily because we move some pieces. So he says, I will send a messenger. Lo ratzal livdol misako afilu rega echad. He doesn't want to stop davening long enough, and therefore he sends a messenger to go to Esther. It's fascinating that Esther picks up that message once she decides that she's going to go. What does he say to her? He says that you have to go in and you have to speak to the king. And she responds on her own, Lech kenosis kol ha'yehudim asher nimtzim b'shushan v'tzu olai. We'll talk about in just a moment, when those 3 days were, and how big a deal it was that the whole Jewish people took off 3 days to fast at that moment. But I want to point out something that you may not have thought of before, even if you've heard the Midrash about which days it was. She says, V'gamani v'na'arotai atzum kein. I will also take up a 3-day fast, and the assumption is, Chazal assume, she's not only fasting, but she's davening. Mishnah Berurah tells us, very famous, that one doesn't fast simply to fast, right? When the people of Nineveh wore sackcloth and they fasted, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't see their sackcloth. He saw the entire process, the tshuva, the turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What choice does Esther make? Esther hasn't been there in 30 days. She's beginning to wonder, is the king that attracted to me? Is it that important that the king see me? If there's one thing that Esther, and this is the plan. Here's the great plan, okay? The great plan is like this. You're going to walk from the woman's palace all the way to the men's palace. First of all, you're going to get past all the guards. And then you're going to show up. Now, you know that the penalty for showing up is sudden death. So you have one shot. The one shot is that you are going to look so drop-dead gorgeous when the king sees you that even though you're supposed to be killed for doing that, but instead he's going to invite you in. Now, Esther, we know, didn't win the beauty contest by making herself up. The pasuk tells us, lo viksha davar. She didn't, all the women could get whatever they wanted. There was a whole studio there and all these things, and they could get whatever. Esther didn't want anything extra. But to fast for 3 days before coming in? So Esther, like Mordechai, has to make a choice. How much do I rely on tefillah, and how much do I rely on human means? And they do the hishtablus. They do what they're supposed to do. But actually, they do it in a way that prefers, that puts the precedence on the tefillah. Absolutely unbelievable. This I saw from Rabbi Yashiv. Unbelievable. She decides that she's going to fast for 3 days. She has one moment to catch the eye of the king. And before that, she's going to fast for 3 days. The Gemara tells us in source number 2, Vayihi chirot hamelech et Esther hamalkah, he sees her. And the Gemara emphasizes, he wasn't naturally overtaken by her beauty. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gimel Malachei Ashores Nizdamnu Lo Ba'is HaShoah. It took three angels. It took three angels after 3 days of her fasting to get this to work. Echad, Shehigbia Et Savara. He lifted up her neck, lifted up her neck. She'd been fasting for 3 days, day and night, Laila Vayom. How would any of us look after, by the time we come to Shul Tisha B'Av, by the afternoon, we look terrible. 3 days she's been fasting. One angel had to lift up her neck. Echad shemasha chut shel chesed aleha. Another somehow made her look very pleasant, whatever that phrase means. Ve'echad shematach et ha'sharvit. And the third one actually got the king to put out the scepter in the first place. It wasn't that he was suddenly overtaken by her beauty. But Mordechai and Esther find this interesting balance. It's an interesting thing for all of us. Spoken before about the rushing out of shul at the end of davening and different aspects. We spoke about this after the massacre in Harnof, about the idea of staying at tefillah till the end for people who would love to have stayed till the end. One of the things I always think about when I'm thinking of leaving early is sort of that balance between tefillah and hishtadlus. So I know I need to get to work on time. I have a meeting and I'm late for the meeting. What is the likelihood that leaving davening 2 minutes early is going to get me to my meeting on time? The Ribbono Shel Olam controls the whole world. I just spent 30 minutes praying to the Ribbono Shel Olam and acknowledging that he's the master of the universe, except when it comes to real things. Except when it comes to really, I did try and get panum base avad and pidisanu, but now I got to get to work. So you'll excuse me, I got to go. Right? The whole thing is absurd. Esther and Mordechai practice incredible belief here, putting the needs of tefillah in front of the needs of ishtadlus. They're not sitting back and saying the Ribbono Shel Olam will provide. They're doing it, but they understand what's the priority here. The third source. Famous Medrash Rabba, Shloshes Yamim Elu, these 3 days, Hein Yud Gimel, the Yudalid, the Tesvav Benisan. When she calls for a 3 day fast, wow, does she pick three interesting days? The 13th, 14th, and most importantly, the 15th of Nisan. Shalach lo v'harei bahem yom rishon shel Pesach. So he sends back. Excuse me, Esther, I know you've been in the palace for a while, and you may not know, and as a queen, you may not need to make Pesach, but the rest of us out here, Pesach is 3 days from now, and I know you have your cheshbonus for why 3 days, but let's maybe do this in 2 days, and then we'll make a Pesach Seder. Amra lo, Zakein Shevi Yisrael. She says to him, Zakein Yisrael, Lama hu Pesach? Who needs Pesach if you have no Jews? Who needs Pesach if you have no Jews? So, the Mashkiach, Rav Chaska Levenstein, the Mashkiach from the Mir, the Chaska Levenstein says, I don't understand. It's a very big mitzvah to make a Seder. That has this whole Scharva Onesh thing work, right? You pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and then you're a better person. You get more points in Shemayim, and Hashem redeems you. Well, you can get a lot of points in Shemayim on the Seder night by eating matzah and doing all those things. Like, what does it matter which mitzvah you do? I always wondered this kind of idea. You know, when you're mevatel the tzibur, it's always a challenge I have in yeshiva. You know, when we get the boys to come in and say prakim of Tehillim, many of them are learning all of the time. So it's not like I'm saying to them, take a little time out of lunch, and you'll come, and instead of eating lunch, which is also a mitzvah, I want you to come and I want you to say Tehillim now. Basically saying to the boys, stop learning, take a whole base medrash, 500 guys, you clock, stop learning, and now we're going to say Tehillim. So I was a little uncomfortable with that. Who says that in the grand scoreboard in Shemayim, if we're trying to get a schus for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, who says that learning doesn't beat davening? That's what Rav Levinstein says. There's a special zuchus. There are special things for special purposes. If you want to save Jews, you daven. Yes, you can do other things in the merit, and when you're doing for a soul of a person, there are lots of things that bring merit. But if you want to save Jews in crisis, davening beats anything else. And that's why, even though they would have had all of Klal Yisrael didn't eat matzah that year, on the first night of Pesach, a biblical mitzvah. But tefillah is more powerful for this particular need and this particular, for saving Klal Yisrael. Miyad shama Mordechai v'hodu l'dvareha. Right? Hahu d'chsiv v'yavor Mordechai. Mordechai avar. He went, but avar is like aveira. Mordechai did an aveira and he did everything Esther said. Shetaman Omrin, there in Bavel, in the Babylonian Talmud, it says, Shehever Yom Tov Shel Pesach Batainis. He told everybody to fast. And then he davens. Galui v'yadua. Lifnei kisei chavodecha adon holamim kilomi gavus leiv umorum ayin asisi es asher lo hishtachavisi lahaman. A very powerful and interesting tefillah from Mordechai. Mordechai knows that he started the problem. Right? Mordechai knows that it was the fact that he didn't bow down to Haman. You know, he says to the Ribono Shel Olam, just want to make it clear, you know that I didn't do this because of my ego. I didn't do this for any ulterior motive other than I thought it was what you wanted. I thought that you didn't want me to bow down to a human being. Ma'asa Mordechai, the next paragraph, Kavas Esa Tinokos. According to the Medrash, there were 12,000 tinokos that were brought together. Ve'ina osam ilachem umayim ve'hilbishan sak. And he made them fast. And he put sackcloth on them. And they were screaming and crying in Oskim Bator. So it's interesting. This is not what the Megillah looks like at first. The Megillah looks like people are acting. But the Megillah says, the Midrashim say, that this was a powerful, powerful time of tefillah. But nothing is perhaps more beautiful than the tefillah of Esther. Nothing is more beautiful. The tefillah of Esther that we don't have, except the Medrash decides that this is what she said. The words that are put by the Chachamim into the mouth of Esther are so beautiful. And listen to what she davens. Uba'es ha'hi, the middle of source number 3. Ha'isa Esther nifchedes ma'od mipnei hara she'tzamcha b'Yisrael. She's now terrified. And she takes off her queenly clothes and everything, and she also puts on sackcloth, and she undoes her hair, and she puts afar ve'efer, she puts ashes and dirt in her hair, and she fasts. V'atipol al panel l'fnei Hashem v'atitpalel v'tomar. And this is what she says. Hashem Elokei Yisrael, asher mashalta mimei kedem uvarases olam. God, you're the creator of the whole universe. I know that you used to rule, you used to show your hand, and I know you created the whole world. You could do anything you want. Azorna amasecha asher nisharti yisoma b'li avayim. She sees herself as the Jewish people, as a mashal for the Jewish people. I have no mother and I have no father. She was an orphan. And she says, listen to this orphan. Listen to me when I turn to you. U'mishula la'aniya sho'eles mibayis l'bayis. I have nobody. I have nobody to go to. I'm going from house to house. Kein ani sho'eles rachamecha micholon lecholon beveis achashverosh. And so too, I'm going from window to window in the house of Achashverosh. What is that reference? Who prayed by a window? Around the same time, yes. It says in the book of Daniel that Daniel specifically prayed by a window. That's why we have windows. We try to have windows in a shul. So what she was doing was she would go from window to window like a poor person, who would go from house to house and knock on doors. What a powerful image this is. She takes off her queenly clothes, and she's literally going window to window as a poor person would go door to door asking for help, in each case turning her eyes to Shammayim. Please help this poor person. And help us from all these enemies. There's nothing holding you back. I know that you can do this and only you can do this. And we'll remember these words because we'll bring them back at the end of the shiur. You who are the father of the orphans, stand to the right of this orphan girl. Powerful, powerful tefillah. You get the sense that how could the Ribbono Shel Olam say no to this poor orphan girl? And we forget that part of the story, but that she's a poor orphan girl going from window to window, praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying, "I know there's no one else I could turn to. I have nobody else." V'tamod b'chatzar beis hamelech. And finally, the Gemara says in Megillah, when she comes into the king, there are all these idols around, and she starts to feel that she's losing her Ruach HaKodesh. Nistalka himana shchina amra keli keli lama azavtani. The 22nd chapter of Tehillim, Chazal tell us, was recited by Esther at this moment. My God, why have you abandoned me? Why have you done this to me? So that's part one. Part one is that although the Megillah at its face value doesn't have the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, has fasting and sackcloth, but Chazal understand that it's so much more than fasting and sackcloth. The core of the Megillah was when the Jewish people prayed, no different than by Pesach. The Jews cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It all starts because they pray. We have to remember that's what the Megillah is really about. There's a crisis for three prakim. The Jews pray, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins to take things in a different direction. That is at the core of the Megillah. But it's not simply the story of the Megillah. It's also the way that the Megillah is read. We bring this theme of tefillah out, it's not just the words of the Megillah, but the way we practice in reading the Megillah. We're all familiar with the fact that we read the Megillah twice. Once at night, and then again during the day. And it's interesting that not only do we read it twice, we actually say Shehechiyanu twice. We say Shehechiyanu twice. Now, yes, the reader during the day, the rabbi announces that the Shehechiyanu is going on all the mitzvos of the day. It's not just going on reading of Megillah, it's also going on Matanos Levyonim and on the Suda and on Mishloach Manos. But isn't that strange that we would say Shehechiyanu twice? Now, when we say Shehechiyanu, the first 2 days of Yom Tov, those are two different days. We're pretending that the second day is the first day. So we say Shehechiyanu again. But why would we say Shehechiyanu both at night and during the day? The Sfasemes suggests, in his commentary to Maseches Megillah, that the night of Purim and the day of Purim are actually, in a sense, two different holidays to relate to this idea of the Megillah in two different ways. If you look at source number 5, there are two interesting sources in the Megillah as to why we read the Megillah twice. And whenever you see that the Gemara brings multiple psukim to prove an idea, you have to ask yourself, is it just that, well, this guy happened to be holding here today? And so, no, I got another pasuk that. Or the different psukim tell us something about these two different approaches. So look at these two psukim. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, chayav adam likrot et ha-megillah ba-layla v'lishnos ha-bayom. You have to read the Megillah at night and again during the day. Shenemar Elokai ekra yomam v'lo ta'aneh v'layla v'lo dumi ali. God, I call out to you during the day and you do not respond, and at night and you're quiet to me. That's actually a continuation of chapter 22. Of Keli, Keli, Lama, Azavtani. Why have you deserted me? The first reason why we read the Megillah twice is because the pasuk says, God, I call to you, and you don't listen to me, so I keep calling to you. The second reason, Amar Ula Bira'a, Chayav Adam Likros, Hasa Megillah, Balayla, V'lishnosa Bayom. Why? Because the pasuk says, in Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid, Leman Yezamercha Kavod V'lo Yidom. Because I want to sing songs to you, and I won't be quiet. I want to sing songs, and then I want to sing them again. Two sources, both which indicate that I'm doing something twice. But how incredibly different are these two psukim? One pasuk says, I cry to you from despair, and I don't hear you, and you don't listen to me, so I call out to you again. The other one says, I praise you, I celebrate what you did, and I'm so excited about it, I'm not going to stop, I'm going to say the whole thing again. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, in a famous lecture, pointed out that there is this dialectic of Purim. That Purim is both a day of crisis, and it's also a day of relief, of partying, of being excited. Right? Sometimes we miss that. The fact is that that's why it's helpful to have Tainus Esther. Tainus Esther reminds us that this wasn't just merriment. The whole Jewish people were almost destroyed. So we have Tainus Esther, and the way we do it, it's sort of like you have Tainus Esther, and then there's like a break, and then everybody comes in with their costumes, and then it's Purim. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, it's not just Tainus Esther and Purim. Purim itself has to have both aspects. Tainus Esther is a later addition. Purim, the holiday, has to have both the despair, realizing how close we were to extinction, and also the joy. Both need to be there. Perhaps, this isn't Rabbi Soloveitchik's thought, but perhaps we can differentiate between the night reading and the day reading. This I saw in a shir from a Baruch Gigi, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva now in the Gush. That perhaps we should be different at the night reading and the morning reading. Besides the fact that we're just very tired in the morning reading and we're really excited at the night reading. It actually should be the opposite. The night reading of the Megillah is an extension of that idea of a day of tzara, a day of tefillah. We shouldn't yet. The reality is that when we hear that first Haman, and we start to, no way, and the whole thing, right? We start doing the whole thing. The only reason why Bernie does that is because Bernie has heard the Megillah before, and Bernie knows it's going to be okay. But we've learned this many times. You can't learn a book of Tanakh properly if you take what you know is going to happen at the end and bring it backwards. The first time that we have Haman, it shouldn't be, although I'm not saying we're suggesting we actually change anything, but it really shouldn't be a stamp him out. It should be a Eigewald. At night, the first time we read the Megillah, we should read it not remembering that it's going to work out okay. It should be crisis. We should be nervous. We should say, if it happened there, could it happen here? We should ask ourselves, why do these things keep happening? Only at the very end of the Megillah does everything work out for the Jewish people. By the morning, we already read it last night. We already read it the night before. By the morning, it's a totally different thing. And maybe that's why we say Shechianu twice. Because there's two different readings of the Megillah. The night reading is the reading where we connect to tefillah. Where we connect to calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, why do you seem to not be listening? How are you letting this man Haman come to power? What are you thinking? Why don't you stop him? The morning, we say Shechianu, that's a different type of Megillah reading. That's a Megillah reading of thank you, of this was wonderful. So it's not simply that tefillah has a place in the Megillah, but tefillah is actually part of the idea of reading the Megillah. Reading the Megillah at night is part of this tefillah. It's our collective nerves, our angst, that are we really safe in Galus? Are we really going to be okay? Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes countries literally lose their mind. Are we really safe? Do we really know what's going to happen? And that has to be part of the night reading. But it's true not simply of the story and the way we read the Megillah, but it's also true of the writing of the Megillah itself. And I want to share with you a very, I don't know, it's a scary medrash. I was giving a shiur in Philadelphia this year. Someone pointed out this medrash to me. I was giving a shiur on tefillah. And he pointed out this remarkable medrash that is scary, but we'll try to grapple with it. Source number 6, the last page. The Medrash is picking up on the following. It's a very, very strange Medrash. The Medrash is picking up that we know that there were letters sent out, right? There were letters sent out, then there were letters sent out, Megillah sent out, and the second letters were very similar to the first letters, right? The first letter said, everybody get ready for the 13th of Adar. And then they sent out letters to the Jews that said, Jews, get ready for the 13th of Adar. Right? That the Jews were allowed to fight back. That was a big deal. Jews were allowed to fight back on the 13th of Adar. The first letters said, Paschegen haksav, li nasein das b'chom, adina amina, lios asidim, layom hazeh. Everybody should be ready. And we pointed out when we learned the Megillah together, it doesn't say what they're supposed to be ready for. Just be ready. Now maybe the reason why the first letter said be ready was because they didn't want to put into print to annihilate the Jews. Yes, it was there in other ways. Maybe there was a first letter that went out, some suggest, that just said something big coming. We know how that works in advertising. Billboard, right? Adar 13, right? Adar 13 and whatever the year is. And then as it gets closer, we're going to let everybody know exactly what's going on. Could be. It looks like they were told from the very beginning to kill the Jews. But somehow they didn't want to put everything in print. When the letter comes out to the Jews, it says, and then it says, the Medrash doesn't quote it, but the Medrash says, look at the end of the Medrash, to take nakama, to take vengeance on all of your enemies. So, when the first letter went out, it just said that you should be ready. Doesn't say what for. The second one said, Jews, be ready to take action against your enemies. Does it matter what you write? So the Medrash says that letters can be prophetic. Letters are powerful. Letters have the ear of the Ribono Shel Olam. Amar Rav Levi, Rabbi Taub, you must know, this is a Rabbi Taub, this is the kind of Medrash you love, I'm sure. This is a Rabbi Taub Medrash. Amar Rav Levi, Umos Ha'olam Nevuason Stuma. When the non-Jews prophesy, they prophesy, they don't know exactly what they're saying. They prophesy in a general way. It doesn't say, it just says, be ready. Be ready for what? To kill or to be killed? Doesn't say. The original version of the letter that went out said, just, it's going to be a big day. It really was a big day. They just didn't know what was going to happen on that day. Mashallah Adam. But the Jews write differently. Amazing. Mashallah Adam Shaya Mahalach Baderach. It's a man walking along the way. Minduchka De'orcha. The guy's really tired. A Jewish guy is going, he's tired. Istava karsule. Karsule is an ankle. Right? Istava means he filled up his ankles. Means his feet got tired. Fancy way of saying he had enough walking. Amar, halavai havelon chad chamar. Ay, Ribbon Shalom, could I use a donkey? I don't even need a lot of donkeys. I just need one donkey right about now. Sure enough. Avar ilavai chad romi. And a Roman, the Romans were in charge at the time. The Yaldis Chamarte Chad Ulai. And a Roman passed by whose donkey had just given birth to one fida, to one baby donkey. Amrlei, Sav. So he turns to the Jew and he says, Jew, get up. Irkav Hadain Il Ulai. Can you carry my donkey till we get to the city? That wasn't exactly what he meant. Right? Like the famous story with the woman and the boy who was drowning and she says, where? And he says, remember, she says, he had a hat. I mean, what are you doing? What's going on? He says, that's exactly what he meant. So he says, Amar, Haitzlusi Ishtama Baram. My prayer must have been heard on high. However, Ana Lo She'ilis Kahogen Im Lamerkav Im Lamarkiva. But I wasn't clear enough with my words. So God heard me. And if I just had said, what? Give me a donkey to ride on, I could have gotten it. Clearly I had his attention. But I said, I need a donkey. So here, I'm carrying this donkey. Right? Kach nevu, that's an amazing man. Kach nevuasun shalumo sa'olun liyos asidim liyamazeh ve'enan yodim larg larg. When the first letter went out, it just said, be ready. Be prepared. The day's coming. Something's going to happen. When we sent out our letter, we said, be prepared in order to take vengeance upon your enemies. This is a very, very strange idea. What does that mean? What does that mean when, what did Akash Baruch Hu think he meant? Akash Baruch Hu thought he meant, I want to carry a donkey, the guy was so tired. What is this about? So what it tells us is the following, that we have to be very careful with our prayers, because our prayers are much more powerful than we think. Our prayers are much more powerful than we think. And what the Medrash seems to be telling us is that tefillah functions not just because I deserve something, or it's coming to me, or it's not coming to me, or I convinced the Ribono Shel Olam. There seems to be unbelievable power to the words that we use. And tefillah is powerful the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Tefillah is powerful in and of itself, and we can control what happens down here. Speak carefully. Speak carefully when you daven. The Or HaChaim says on the pasuk, Ve'eschanan el Hashem ba'esahi le'mor. One of the most famous prayers in all of Tanakh, Moshe Rabbeinu praying to Hashem to go into the land of Israel. What does it mean, le'mor? To say, usually to say. God says something to Moshe, and he says, say it to the Jewish people. But this was only between God and Moshe. So le'mor, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, means say the tefillah perfectly. How do you say it? He says he does four things, the fourth of which he says, Shetehet filoso mefureshes, source number 7 at the bottom. Velo ties soveles perush bilti hagon. He marked his words to the Ribono Shel Olam that there's no other way to understand them. It's a very profound idea. Not only in terms of saying the words of tefillah properly, those words function, that's the way God created the world. But that especially when we ask for something, we should ask specifically. We should ask in the right way. Source number 8 says, the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us that when Chana prayed that Shmuel should stay in the Mishkan ad olam. If I have a child, I don't have a child, I'm going to come to Shiloh, and if I'm given a child, I'm going to, that child should be here ad olam. Well, the word olam in the Chumash has a very specific meaning. How long is an olam in the Chumash? Right, in the laws of Yovel, it's 50 years. She brings Shmuel to the Mishkan at what age?
2.
When does he die? 52. That's a scary Yerushalmi. Now, mind you, we are not Mordechai and Esther. We are not Moshe. We are not Chana. This doesn't mean that you should suddenly have a panic attack in the middle of Shema Kolenu to say, I just asked for something, but I don't know if I asked it right. But it does mean that our words of that which we ask for, we should be very specific, and we should be careful in how we ask. The Yaros Dvash, in the first drasha, talks about the fact that sometimes we don't ask for things from the Ribono Shel Olam, and if we just ask, we should see it as if we're going through a checklist with the Ribono Shel Olam. We should ask him, I need this, I need this, I need this. Be specific. That's the way tefillah works. And you don't have to be in the middle of a Shmona Esrei. You don't have to be in a Shmona Esrei. Imagine how much more religious we would be. Religious is the word I use. Religious we would be if on the way to doing things, we would bring them in. One of my students years ago started giving out these cards that had a Yehi Ratzon for saying before you take medicine. I take a lot of medicine, you guys can imagine. Before I take medicine, I try to actually say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me through this medicine. It's not like an incredible frumkeit thing. It's a very religious thing. It makes me feel the sense of God. It's not just the pills, it's the Ribono Shel Olam. Imagine if everything we did, we just put in a word, please give me a hand. Please help me out. That's this idea. That's this idea that even the writing of the Megillah has this message. When we hear those words, Lehinakein, that the Jewish version was specific, it's the power of tefillah to be able to ask for anything that we want, but ask for it specifically. Don't say my family. When you're giving a Misha Beirach, that's a separate issue. There's a Tircha de Tzibura. I'm a big fan of V'chol mishpachto, v'chol ves harav, ves kol mishpachto, ves kol mispalimka. Then you throw everybody in. But when you're talking to the Ribono Shel Olam, you're not in such a rush. List the names. Ask for the specific things that you want. And finally, not only is tefillah at the core of the story of Purim, not only at the story of the Megillah, not only is tefillah represented in the Megillah reading, which we do at night, not only in the Megillah writing, but I think it's really at the core of Purim Day. It's really at the core of Purim Day. And here's where I'm going to make a pitch. That we try to remember to actually daven on Purim. Because it really goes by the wayside. And me, myself as much as anybody else. It's just not a day of prayer. We're missing an incredible opportunity to speak to the Ribono Shel Olam. We've discussed before the phenomenal idea of the Maharal. The Maharal explains how it could be, it's Parshas Vayikra, how it could be that tefillah replaced korban. How could that be? We know that today we don't have any more korbanos, so we daven. But he says you couldn't think of two things which are more different when it comes to tefillah, when it comes to bringing a korban. So I live up in the Galil, and I take 2 weeks off of work, and I come down to Yerushalayim, and I give something to the Ribono Shel Olam. And now, I take 2 minutes off of work, and I get to ask for things from the Ribono Shel Olam. This is a great deal. Forget about the 2 weeks and the 2 minutes. The whole idea of korbanos is the sacrifice. I'm supposed to give things to the Ribono Shel Olam. Now, I don't have to give him anything. I get to ask for stuff. How could one possibly replace the other? And the Maharal says so beautifully and simply. The reason why I give a korban to Hashem, or I give a sacrifice to Hashem, is not because he needs it, but because it's his. It's his. The word for the sacrifices is avoda, from the word eved. When I'm an eved, I don't own my things. When the master tells me I want it back, so I give it back to him. It's that simple. When I bring a korban, I'm acknowledging that everything that I have is his. I hope that he'll let me keep some of it, but if he doesn't, it's his decision. What do I do when I pray? When I daven, I do the same thing. Except instead of acknowledging it by giving him things, I acknowledge it by saying, I have nothing on my own. I don't even have merit. Could you please give me this? Could you please give me that? Could you please give me that? The idea of tefillah is to recognize that everything belongs to Hashem. The idea of giving a korban is that everything belongs to Hashem. It doesn't matter whether you're giving it to him or you're asking from him. By the fact that I ask him, I acknowledge that it's all his. And we've explained that that's the end of Shemoneh Esrei is about. After I asked him for so many things, after I recognize I need this and I need that and I need that and I need that, I go through all things, what do? I do modim. The Maharal says modim is I'm nothing. It's not a balanced bow. I just fall. It doesn't work for us to all really fall on the floor. But when I go down for modem, I'm basically going down. I have nothing. I have no merit. I have no skills. I have nothing. Everything's from you. That's the goal of tefillah, to ask and ask and ask and remember that it all comes from him. Modeh, modim. Modim doesn't mean thank you. Modeh, we quoted this before, Rav Huttner says that modeh means I admit. I admit that you are the one that has everything. Modeh b'miktzas. But instead of admitting to some, I admit to everything. I don't have anything. That's what happens on Purim. That's the essence of Purim Day. The Purim story is insanity. The Purim story is about a world that's gone crazy. The Jewish people are in Galus. And when the Jewish people are in Galus, whether it's during the time of the Purim story, or it's the time of 2016, when Jews are in Galus, crazy things happen. And Jews feel that we are ultimately not in control of our destiny. We're afraid of forces that are going on around us, forces that are going on in the world. And it's true whether we live in the real Galus or even in the Galus stage of Eretz Yisrael. We feel like we are at the mercy of the rest of the world. It's very interesting that one of the mitzvos of Purim is to be a shtickel tipsy. It's very interesting that the day that we mark the fact that we remember, especially at night, we remember that everybody's out to get us. We remember one of the first anti-Semites. And it's amazing if you learn the Gemara and Megillah, the things that Haman says about us, they still say about us today. Every single line. It's the day that we remember that we're not safe, that we have a little bit of a drink. I would think it'd be the opposite. I think we should drink coffee all day. We shouldn't fall asleep for a second. If there's any day where we should have eyes on the back of our heads, it's anti-Semitism day. It's the day that we should be completely focused and completely sharp. We should stay in our homes and we should lock the doors. Instead, we're outside, we're drinking, we're going around, we're doing... What's crazy? Purim is the day where we remember that at the end of the day, there's no one that can protect us except the Ribono Shel Olam. We are completely in the hands of the Ribono Shel Olam. The world is absurd at times. And there are moments in history where it goes really absurd, and almost every time the world goes crazy, it ends up with Jews dead. And we're not in control. We can't. We're nothing. We fall on the ground. Hopefully not literally on Purim. But we fall on the ground as if to say, I might as well have a l'chaim, because I can do my little bit of ishtadlus. I can try. But at the end of the day, you're the one that's in control. The essence of the day of Purim is almost to ignore the reality. It's a day where the one day of the year where the Jews leave reality. The world is not a fun place. It's not a place of merriment and drinking. It's a very dangerous place for Jews. It's a very difficult place for Jews. But one day a year, we acknowledge that at the end of the day, we can't protect ourselves anyway. We need to do what we can. We need to put up fences. We need to donate for... But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if I have a little l'chaim, because Purim is that day when I remember that we have nothing. We have nobody that can protect us. We're all orphans of sorts. The Ribono Shel Olam is the Avi Yisomim. We go from window to window, and we know it's only the HaKadosh Baruch Hu who can protect us anyway. It says the Medrash Tanchuma. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Have a Zahirim Batfila. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to us, I promise I'm going to get you to the end of time. I promise I'm going to watch over you in the most difficult things. Just daven. She'ein mida acheres yafa himana v'hi gedoylu mikol ha-karbonos. There's nothing like davening. It's more powerful than any of the karbonos. V'afilu ein adam kedai lanos v'tfiloso v'lasos chesed imo. And even if we have nothing... Even if we don't deserve it, even if we haven't fulfilled our historic mission, kevan shemispalal umarbe betachanunim anios ha-chesed imo. The Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not checking your scoreboard on Purim. I'm not checking who you are on Purim. Because if I did, there wouldn't be the Jewish people anymore. You just trust me that at the end of the day, I'm your father, I'm going to protect you, even when it seems like everything is lost, even when you're convinced that you don't have the merit to be able to get from me. And there is no day that we show that midah in the same way as Purim. How are the laws of tzedakah different on Purim than the rest of the year? How is Matanos Lev Yonim different than the tzedakah that we give the rest of the year? So we know there's a fascinating halacha that during the year, and especially in Queens, the Vada Rabbanim of Queens has told us that in order to make sure we're giving the right people, you should say, do you have your whatever from the Vad? Do you have your Tuda from the Vad? Right? You have your thing. Don't say that on Purim. On Purim, we don't ask people for anything. They ask, we give. How could we not turn to the Ribono Shel Olam on the day that we are giving without asking, on the day that anybody comes and says, can I have something, we're giving it. How can we not turn to the Ribono Shel Olam on that day? We're busy drinking, we're busy hearing the Megillah, we're busy being partying. But that's the day, the one day of the year, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not checking. I'm not looking at your record today. Just ask me specifically for what you need. Says the Sefer Segulas Yisrael, Segula, Kabbalah Sefer, Segula bePurim laHarbos bTfila uBakasha lifnei Hashem Yisparach haKol Dover. Whoever heard of this? Purim is a powerful day of tefila. Yes, Erev Rosh Chodesh, and we get these emails daven on this day for your children, this and that. Who knew that one of the most powerful days of tefillah the whole year could be Purim, Yom Kippurim? Ki ba'oso ayom u'es ratzon gadol ma'od. Fechol ha'olamos hema b'simcha v'ratzon. The whole world is happy on that day, even the heavenly worlds. V'alzeh amur ha'boseinu kol ha'poshet yad nosnim lo. All we have to do is put out our hands in tefillah. It's that simple. Maybe that's why the Satan has us all half drunk that we can't daven on that day. Maybe that's why the Satan makes sure that at night we're so busy making sure everybody's costume is in the right place that we miss Myriv to come and hear the Megillah. Maybe that's why the Satan makes us stay out so late at night so we get to shul in the morning and we miss Shacharis and we just get there for the Megillah. All three tefillos are blown on Purim. But it turns out Purim is one of the most powerful days of the year to daven. And when you give to an ani matanos levyonim, you should remember that we are those evyonim. We are the yesomim. We are the orphans. We are the ones who turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who there's no one else to turn to. As the Gemara says, and we'll conclude with this, kfarim makdim leyom aknisa govin bo bayom machalkim bo bayom. We know that when the Megillah reading can get pushed up, right? So the question is, when the Megillah reading gets pushed up, the Gemara tells us that people used to come in from the other cities. They would sometimes lane a couple of days before. So which mitzvos go with the Megillah? And which mitzvos stay on the day of Purim? The Suda stays on the day of Purim. But the Tzedakah goes with Purim. Mipnei she'eneim shel aniyim, the eyes of the poor, nesuos b'mikra Megillah. They turn towards Nasa'is to lift up. They lift up. They're lifted up. They're looking. They're saying, I know the Aniyim call me. They call Rabbi Rosenfeld. They call Rabbi Tal. They don't know who to call this year. The Aniyim are panicking. They're not sure what to do. This is the day. They're waiting. Purim Day. I know I do well on Purim Day. How am I going to get my money on Purim Day? They find the Megillah reading, and they know that they're going to be okay. And that's what we have to do as well, Rabbi Osai. Because tefillah, it turns out, is at the core of Purim. Not just the story of the Megillah, not just the way we read the Megillah, not just in the writing of the Megillah, but the whole essence of Purim, of being not, of recognizing that we're helpless. And that's the story of Purim more than anything else. We're ultimately helpless in the world. That we are Aniyim, that we are Evyonim, that we are Yesomim. And we turn to the Kodesh Baruch Hu and say that if this is the day that we give to everybody else without asking questions, then this is what we need to. We should take advantage of Mitzvah Shev. We should pray for our families, specifically for those in Eretz Yisrael, for everything that we need this Purim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu show us the Yeshua, just as He showed us then. This has been Lazech HaNishmas, Miriam Bas Moshe Tzvi, Aleh Shalom, and Neshama should have an Aliyah. Chaim and Akash, Mr. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lazaka Israel, Fikachem Dorm Sinema, the Nachves, the Mansi. Kol Yagdil, Torah, Viyadir.
Kadel, Vikadesh, Merabba, Yamad, Divrach, Rutei. Namlik, Mavatei, Vachayachon, Vimechon, Vachayachon, 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 Vachayachon,